I like a particularly maximalist aesthetic. I love to see the energy of lots of different patterns jostling together. I love to see, you know, for example, I'm looking across the room and there is a floral chair with a checkered cushion on it. And one is quite big and blousy and the other one's quite tight and they have a kind of like little friction going on between them. And I love that. But the reason it works is the red in the cushion is repeated in the red in the floral.
Welcome back to a new series of House Guest with me, Carol Annett, chatting to clever people who shape the world around us through decoration and design.
Today I'm sitting with Sophie Robinson in her gorgeous house. It's only taken me a little while to get here. In deepest, darkest Sussex. Absolutely lovely. Recently kitted out with Harlequin, but we'll talk about that later. Sophie is an interior designer and a broadcaster, and she is an authority on colour. She's also what I like to call the aesthetic agony aunt on your wonderful podcast with Katie Watson-Smythe. Anyway, thank you so much, Sophie. Thanks for welcoming me, making me a cup of tea. And it's lovely to be here.
Oh, it's so lovely to have you here. And yeah, and welcome to my home, which is, as you've already highlighted, newly decorated. I think we've been here 7 years. Finally, the big thing was getting the new kitchen in. So yeah, it's really nice to welcome you into my beautifully decorated home, finally.
So what I'm curious about is, what's your background? Did you train as an interior designer? Or was it something that you came into?
Yeah, it's been a very organic journey through the world of interior design. I actually studied a degree at Brighton University called Wood Metal Plastics and Ceramics, wow, which was an amazingly creative course. It was.
Are they still doing it?
Yeah, I believe so. I believe they're still doing it. But it was really gearing up to discovering design through the process of making.
Yeah.
So a lot of people who graduated from that degree went on to become designer makers, lighting designers, ceramicists, furniture makers, kitchen makers. It was very, very diverse. And I specialise in plastics because that's where you get the most colour in. I was like, woodwork, not so much. It's all brown. So I then moved to London. I got a studio at a place called Cockpit Arts, which is still going in Holborn, which is a great place for supporting young designers. And I had a collection of lighting that I sold to Liberty. So I thought I'd made it. Here I was at Cockpit Arts. Liberty ordered my lighting. And then I realised very quickly how hard it is to make a living in that industry while you're paying London rent. So I started assisting a stylist who was a friend of my, it was a mum of a friend from college, and she did all the Laura Ashley catalogues. Okay, so this is how old I am. This is sort of pre-online shopping, where you used to get your big, thick Laura Ashley catalogue twice a year.
And literally, when you got a catalogue like that, you would sit and flick through it. It was heaven.
It was heaven. And obviously so much went into producing those catalogues. Enormous amount of photography, photo shoots. And so they'd had these big teams of stylists, photographers, set builders, assistants. And I became her assistant for a few years and I loved it. So that was kind of opening my eyes into the world of interior design for the media, if you like, which has very much been my journey into this industry. And so following that, I ended up with a job on a magazine. I worked for a title called BBC Good Homes, which was a magazine that supported all the TV shows that BBC were doing at that time. It was the high time of Changing Rooms and Ground Force and Homefront, all those,
there was
pioneering makeover shows.
Yeah, wasn't there?
So this is the early noughties, 2000. I got a job there as an in-house stylist. Went freelance in 2005, and then that's just opened up lots of being self-employed. I then got opportunities to work on TV, 60 Minute Makeover being one of the earliest shows that I designed for, DIY SOS, obviously the Great Interior Design Challenge for BBC Two was my big break, if you like, because I was a judge on that. So it's been a really windy road, but I think, actually, funny enough, it was my TV agent in 2016 said, you should get a YouTube channel and an Instagram account, because I think that's where you're going to make the most money. That was her advice. And so Instagram was really fledging in 2016. So I was like, okay, yeah, I'll do that. And she was so right. It's kept me really busy. And then obviously, but I suppose just keeping really nimble, I then started the podcast with Kate in 2018. So I'm just always waiting for what's the next big thing going to be, and I'll be here and I'll jump on it.
But why is it that colour is so important to you? I mean, there's so many aspects of interior design.
Yeah, I think I've always really loved bright, saturated colours. I think everybody, what I've discovered through working with people is everybody has a very personal relationship with colour. And it's definitely, you know, not one colour suits all. And I've really connected with what my colour palette is. It's bright, it's saturated, it's this quite joyful, uplifting, energising colour palette. That's what works for me. That's what makes me happy. You know, Kate, who I've already said, my podcast co-host, she's more of a brownie tonal terracotta. And she even takes the mickey in my sunglasses when she comes and visits me here. This is too much for her. So I think that's the thing, is I'm very fascinated with how people relate to colour differently. And for me, it's always been these bright colours, which has served me really well. So for example, as a stylist, as a magazine stylist, and as a freelance stylist, I had to really take my own personality out of the equation. It was all about fulfilling a brief for a client, be it doing a shoot for Living, etc., or House Beautiful. Everyone had a different in-house style. We'd do a lot on trends, so it was never about my personal taste. It was always about fulfilling the brief. And then when I got the job for BBC Great Interior Design Challenge, I just like wearing bright clothes. But the commissioner at the BBC was like, we love what Sophie's wearing. Can she wear more bright colour? And so I think that's when I started getting celebrated for myself and what I love. And then obviously, as I moved on to Instagram, the whole success of Instagram is you have to be your own authentic self and you have to sort of be a niche. So that's when I was like, okay, on my Instagram account, I'm going to share what I like, which I can't do in my commercial work, which is this love of bright interiors. And it's just absolutely exploded from there, really.
But do you think you can teach yourself to be colour aware or to have an eye? Because I always say to interior designers who completely take it for granted, for example, about space planning, they walk into a space and they go, oh, well, that should be there and that should be there. Whereas I write about interior design, I have very little creativity of my own. And I'm in literally utterly in awe of how, you know, Kit Kemp puts her palettes together, how people mix modern and antique, and you know, these colours that we're sitting in here. I mean, there's such a mishmash. You've got stripes, you've got floral piping on the sofa, you've got wiggly lines, but it looks amazing.
Yeah, you know, it's been really interesting trying to break down my particular design process, which, first of all, I'd say it isn't easy. I think for anybody who's beating themselves up going, oh, I just don't know how to put a colour palette together. I've been working as an interior designer for 25 years and I still agonise, plot, plan, change my mind. Is it this? Is it that? So first of all, I'd like to admit that it takes a bit of work. You're not just going to it just doesn't pop in my mind and go, oh yeah, I'll just do that. It is a creative process. And there isn't really a very detailed baking recipe, for example, that you can follow. Well, it's a percentage of this and it's a percentage of that. But there are guidelines. And actually, one of the things I've really loved doing is building up my online interior design school where I can teach people this stuff online. But I had to work with somebody to help me write the courses because it was literally stuff that I do
without thinking about it.
Yes. Well, you know, I think about it, but I don't really understand. I just know when it's right. Yeah. I think like any creative or artistic person, I've got a lot of friends who are artists because I went to art school who paint pictures, but they couldn't tell you why they know those colours good. They just feel it. And I think interior design, good interior design has an element of that. You have to feel it. Does it feel right? So actually a lot of what I try and teach people is to get into that emotional zone with colour and not overanalyze it, because it's not always a very logical thing. And of course, there are guidelines that you can follow. So for example, you're sitting here in my conservatory. I've heard interior designers say you should never use more than 3 patterns. Well, I haven't actually counted how many, but we're definitely in double figures, aren't we? So I like a particularly maximalist aesthetic. I love to see the energy of lots of different patterns jostling together. I love to see, you know, for example, I'm looking across the room and there is a floral chair with a checkered cushion on it. And one is quite big and blousy and the other one's quite tight and they have a kind of like little friction going on between them. And I love that. But the reason it works is the red in the cushion is repeated in the red in the floral. So that's what I try and thread my colour palettes together is just repeat certain things over and over. So if it's colour palette, if you've got reds going on, make sure they're tonally the same reds. Same for the blues and the greens. It just makes it feel a bit more coherent. Similarly, you know, you'll notice with the different woods we've got going on, they're all of a similar tone. I've only got one metallic in here, which is brass. So there is a lot going on, but I'm actually keeping the palette of materials, colours, textures and patterns quite tight, actually. And that's the bit that I have to really think about.
Yeah, it's very clever. And it's to a visitor, you don't realise that. You just see
a lot of stuff.
There's a harmony to it as well.
Yeah. So I think it's thinking of these threads and repetitions. I think that's the thing. I mean, for example, another thing is mixing different styles. You know, some people are like, how do you know how to create an eclectic interior that might have something really modern from Habitat mixed with granny's armchair, mixed with a piece of the Victorian sideboard? I mean, I've got like a 1980s sideboard here, haven't I? Those are my granny's Berger cane chairs. And then, you know, I've got some modern lighting pieces in here and a really modern piece of artwork, for example.
And can I say what I love is fabric covered over
the
table. So because it's such a simple way of, first of all, covering up a rubbish looking table.
Yeah.
I'm sure yours isn't rubbish.
No, it's a really average but table under there.
It's a brilliant tool for just, and also, you know, you can't have enough little tables to put your cup of tea down or whatever.
Well, I think the thing is I am passionate about fabrics. I love textiles and I love patterns. So having a, this is a round table. It's about 60 centimetres tall, probably about the same diameter. And we've cut a tablecloth that drapes all the way to the floor in a really bold red and pink stripe. And it's just another opportunity for me to get some colour and some pattern in. Similarly with footstools. I always have footstools, never coffee tables, because I can get more pattern and fabric on it. So it's the opportunity to layer more colour, more fabric, more pattern and softness as well. I really like soft, cosy, homely interiors. So where I can get rid of any hard edges and have a fabric, then I will.
And do you paint furniture as well? Do you put pattern on furniture, given half the chance?
Yeah. For example, I've just recently decorated my bedroom and I actually ended up just painting the bedside tables rather than throwing them out and getting some new ones. I just changed the colour of them, some paint. I think that's so quick and easy to do. And I think we have to think about that. I mean, not everybody's got an empty checkbook. So, and neither should you really. If you've got something that's fit for purpose, it's just the wrong colour.
Yeah.
Then I'm all for painting furniture. I have in the past covered bits of furniture in wallpaper. That's another nice thing, like wardrobe doors, for example, or I did a chest of drawers once to get some extra pattern in. I haven't got anything like that in the house at the moment because there's so much wallpaper on the walls right now.
So let's talk about Harlequin and how the collaboration came together. Did they come to you or?
Yeah, they came to me. They'd previous to me done a really successful collaboration with Ben Pentreath and William Morris, which you may really great collaboration, and it was so successful for them. I think they thought, right, who else can we work with? So Harlequin, the Sanderson Group, obviously have 9 fabric companies, I think, under their umbrella. William Morris is one, Harlequin is the other. Now Harlequin as a brand for the Sanderson Group is all about colour and all about people who want to embrace colour and pattern. So I think quite rightly they saw me as the perfect match for that. So I bit the hand off, of course I did. I've never worked on a wallpaper or fabric collaboration before. And, you know, just to be completely transparent, I was not designing the wallpapers and fabrics. I didn't get my paintbrush out and start painting flowers. I worked with the incredibly talented in-house design team at Harlequin. We've got Flora, who hand-painted loads of the design. She hand-painted the mural that I've installed in my office, which is incredible. And then Claire Greenfield, who is the lead designer for the Harlequin brand, her knowledge on fabric. So I learned so much about the difference with the weaves and the embroideries and the linens and the printed velvets, not to mention all the different wallpaper printing techniques that I'd just taken for granted. But they print and manufacture all their wallpaper here in the UK.
Loughborough, isn't it?
Yeah, so I got to visit the factory. So she had incredible technical knowledge as well as really understanding colour. They have a really deep understanding of colour. Of course they do, because they design wallpapers and fabrics. And then my job really was to tell the story, art direct it really, and work, and bring my interior design expertise of creating a palette of fabrics that I knew people could use themselves. So my experience of a lot of pattern books is they get put into these sort of colour families and you stick to those. But that's not really how we design anymore. You know, the kind of, I sort of think of Jane Churchill being a real classic one, where the gingham goes with the floral, goes with the stripe, goes with the wallpaper, and it's a ready home-baked look and you just buy that colourway. I think the way we're designing now is to be a lot more personal, individual, original. So interior designers will take a fabric from one book and they'll take it from another book, which is fine if you know all the different brands. But I'm always trying to help the person at home designing their own home design like an interior designer. That's kind of like my mission, is to share our secrets and help people create really confident colour schemes. So this book, yes, there are colour families, but they also cross-pollinate. So for example, in this conservatory you're sitting in, we've got the red stories that you're sitting on over there, then there's the greens, and then there's the yellows, and then I've got blue. I mean, I've got all the colours in here. Because when you have that, this is my understanding, when you have that tight colour palette, kind of anything goes, if you like.
And you said that you were inspired by the, you know, where your house is and the countryside. I mean, it's an idyllic spot. We're looking out onto a weeping willow and a pond and just trees.
Yes.
I mean, it's utterly beautiful.
Well, we're surrounded by ancient woodland around here. It's a really lovely spot. And I think whenever I'm working on an interior design project, I think you've always got to tell a story. I don't think it's ever just like, oh, I just want to put some nice stuff in my house. It's always like, yeah, there's some storytelling to go on. So I feel, living here in East Sussex, surrounded by woodland, wildflowers, the weeping willow, that I want to bring those kinds of natural references into my home. I don't really want the palm tree or the parrot wallpaper, because that's not speaking to what's going on outside. So we very much use the Sanderson Archive, which is incredible, 200,000 archive pieces.
Wow.
So for example, the woodland floral that I'm sat opposite, that was an archive design that Claire then recoloured, and we rejigged it a bit to make it more modern and within our colour palette. So within the collection, I love the fact that we've got these old English floral designs, but we've made them modern with the colours.
So by making it modern, is that because, to me, it looks like that there's nothing, there's no sort of little twee. It's kind of quite big. Did you enlarge
Yes, exactly. So yeah, we did. Because for me, it is about creating bold statement designs. So everything's quite big scale. Having said that, the wildflower meadow floral, which I've used to create sails here in the conservatory, is a really tiny ditzy floral. Because again, when I'm putting schemes together, I want the big scale and I want the small scale. I want the stripe, I want the check, I want the big wide stripe, and then I want the little ticking stripe. So I suppose that's what I brought to it, is making sure across the collection there are lots of different scales of print. Also, there's some really modern designs in there too. So as I sort of said, the team at the Harlequin Studio were also, yes, they were recolouring archive prints, but we were also creating new, fresh, contemporary designs to mix into. Because again, I love that. Yes, I live in a Sussex farmhouse surrounded by ancient woodland, but I have very contemporary tastes. I love modern design. I love to see what artists are doing. And I think a home can have all of those things. And I hope this collection shows how you can blend the kind of the old and the new together.
One of my favourites is the, I think it's called Jewel Beetle.
Yes.
With the beetle. That's just brilliant. Because also it's not a sweet butterfly. I mean, you sort of get close and you, oh,
it's a beetle.
But it's and that was fabulous.
That was really intentional, actually. And I talked to the Harlequin team and they were sort of like, okay, you know, we're doing the woodland thing. Would you like to bring in like birds and squirrels and all the kind of woodland animals? It's like, no, don't want any birds or squirrels. I want a beetle. And again, you know, beetles are everywhere in my garden. I love a beetle, so they are here. But there's something, there's just something a bit more edgy, I think. And again, it's this juxtaposition of having the really pretty English florals and then you've got a jewel beetle cushion or blind or whatever. I just love that sort of friction of having a bit of everything. And that is an embroidered fabric, isn't it? So it's got really kind of three-dimensional stitching, which is why we called it Jewel Beetle. So it really, it's really jewelly and bright and gorgeous.
And have you had the opportunity to use them in other interiors other than here? I mean,
not yet. It's so new. It's so new. Literally, the collection launched last week.
Oh, crikey.
I only got my box of samples the day before yesterday. So it's so fresh.
That's the trouble being a journalist. You get the press release and you think it's out there. It's out there. Of course it's not.
No, it's so new. Yeah. So what I'm seeing at the moment on my Instagram account, because people have been so lovely sharing, is just lots of people calling in their samples at the moment. Lots of interior design accounts I follow going, oh, I've just got my Sophie Robinson Harlequin samples. So I'm literally cannot wait to see how people use the fabrics in their own designs. Oh, it's going to be so thrilling. Definitely. And I obviously, I mean, there's so many. I think there's 25 wallpapers. I've used one. I've only got two in my home so far. They're the third one on the way because we were actually in the living room. And I'm like, oh, I wish I could use them all, but I literally don't have enough rooms to do it in.
And are you still, I mean, I know you're super busy, but do you still have time to craft and make?
Oh, no, gosh, I've just got to be totally honest. No, I don't. And that would be the dream, wouldn't it? Mm. We have my mum who lives next door to us. We built an annex for her when we lived here. And she's a potter and she has a pottery studio in the
field. So that's where you get it from.
So I should be, shouldn't I?
Yeah.
But I'm at that point in my career and my life where carving out any time for myself is feeling really impossible. But that's, yeah, it's not good. I'd like to aspire to be more hands-on creative, yeah.
So what have you, talking about the future then, what have you got coming up? What are you doing?
Oh, lots of exciting things. Lots of exciting things. Well, one of the things that is really exciting is this collection I've done with Harlequin is the first time I've collaborated with a brand on products, but it seems to be a thing. And I've got another three or four brands that I'm working on things with at the moment, so that 2024 is going to look quite good for that, bringing more colour and pattern to products. And that's a totally new thing for me. As I said, I've never done that before, so that's super exciting. What's interesting about my job is it's really hard to predict because things just come up all the time. I did a screen test for a new TV show yesterday. Who knows if that's going to happen? So
exciting.
I don't know. It's all, but it's all about what's lovely, I think, for me in my position is I'm seeing more and more brands, TV shows want to get into colour and want to help people have more colourful interiors. I think in terms of media, especially TV, it's been so beige for so long, hasn't it? And I think because the emphasis has been on property shows and architecture, that there hasn't really been a space for the wallpaper and the fabrics and the beautiful styling. It's sort of all been about, you know, are they going to get the double glazed bifold doors in on time and are they going to be on budget? You know, that's been the narrative. And I think because people aren't moving and spending so much money on builds, perhaps moving forward, and we are really seeing how colour and pattern in a well-presented home really makes us feel good.
Yeah.
That there's more emphasis on that.
I think also, you know, when I go and look around show homes or where, you know, for example, I was at the OO the other day, the O War Office, and this incredible penthouse, which has been designed by Studio Winch. And, you know, so often in the past, you would go and look at a show house or a show space and, yeah, you know, fine, beautiful, but a bit meh.
Bit beige.
Now, they are bringing, there is so much more to it. And it's much more of a unique space and lots of colour. I mean, they use a lot of Pierre Frey and beautiful. I mean, it looked amazing. And I'm mixing old and new. And I think that there's, and with hotels as well, you know, it's that realisation that actually when you go to a hotel, you know, there was this time 20 years ago, we always wanted to go to a hotel and make it look like our house, you know, vice versa. But now, the spaces, it seems to me, people like Luke Edward Hall and Beata Human, they want something different. There is just much more colour, texture, pattern.
And individuality, isn't it?
And individuality.
Yeah. And I think, you know, because of the property flipping phenomena, it was all about taking your personality out of your home.
Yeah,
you know, totally. If you don't put limestone tiles in your bathroom and get a beige kitchen, you'll never sell your house for maximum profit.
So true.
And I think people are still slight, some people are still slightly in the clutches of that fear. You know, I definitely still work with people who are like, but what if I can't go for the bright purple kitchen of my dreams because what if I want to sell it one day? And I think, okay, if you're going to sell it in the next 3 years or whatever, maybe not the bright purple kitchen. Let's think about something that's going to appeal to your buyer. But if you're, as we are, staying here for the foreseeable, then absolutely you should have what you have, what you want, the colours that you want. And because it makes you feel so good. This is your whole environment. And I think a lot of research is coming out all the time on how our interior spaces make us feel good. And it's not always, funny enough, I did an interview the other day about bedrooms. And I was like, there just seems to be this like rule that bedrooms need to be calming and relaxing. And I'm like, I don't need a calming and relaxing bedroom. As soon as the light goes out, I am asleep. I want a bedroom that makes me feel fabulous. So when I wake up in the morning, I feel energized. When I'm getting ready to go out in the evening, I'm living my best life. I don't want to be surrounded by soothing beiges and creams.
Okay, here's the question. Do you have a disco ball in your bedroom?
No, but I think I should. My goodness. That shirt's absolutely coming next.
It is. It's so interesting. And I think so much of it is to do with confidence and colour confidence and just confidence in ourselves and having been at home for a long time, or, you know, people now working at home a lot more. We've realised that actually being in an environment that makes you happy has such an influence on your whole life.
Yeah. Yeah, it really does. There's an amazing piece of research that was actually taken out in 2018 by the Happiness Institute. There is such a thing in Copenhagen. And they were given the brief to find out how the home supports us emotionally. And they did mass data across Europe, so not just in the UK. Really, really intensive study. And they found out that the top five things that make us feel happy in life, first of all, our mental health, of course. Number two was our physical well-being and health, of course. Number three was happiness in the home. Then came the amount of money in your bank account. And then came your community, your friends, your social standing. So I was like, it's right there at the top. And I think how much effort we put into earning money and thinking that's going to make us happy. But actually having a beautiful home that works for you. And there's lots of things that go towards that. Having the colours that surround you, of course. But one interesting thing that came out that always sticks in my mind, having been somebody who was about to spend a lot of money on an extension and then decided last minute not to do it, that actual space, square footage, doesn't make you feel happier. So having a bigger house, you know, we always think we've got to move, get a bigger house, an extension. That doesn't correlate to well-being, but a feeling of space does. And so you can live in the biggest house, but if you don't feel spacious because it's cluttered or badly organised or badly laid out, so you can have a really tiny home, but if you've got it well organised, you've got your layout working, you've got lots of natural light coming in. So it really made me challenge a lot of our preconceived ideas, I think, about what we think is going to make us feel happy at home.
Yeah, it's fascinating, absolutely fascinating. Okay, one last question. How often do you change your decor?
I probably, at the moment, change it more than most because we've just had this big launch. So, you know, I'm not going to lie. It's unusual for me to have just done so much in such a short space of time because we wanted to install the collection in my home. So we've just done 5 rooms, which is unusual. But no, I'm not somebody who's decorating a lot. This is kind of what I want to sort of share with my students, really, is it's not about decorating, feeling you then need to change it. I think things can morph and change organically, but once you've worked out what your colour palette and your personal style is, it's really easy to tweak and change. So, for example, you know, those chairs that I'm looking at in my conservatory could also go into the kitchen. They still go. They could go into another room because the colours kind of work together. I've switched lamps around. That art piece of artwork used to be in my office. It's now in here. So I think you can refresh your home slowly without having to constantly think of a big redesign if you get it right, if you do the work at the beginning, that's and the you key. Nail your style and you nail your colours and you understand who you are and what you love, then just take your time. I mean, I'm a real fan of the go slow approach to decorating. I think that's what most people are doing. Very few people have a big photo shoot deadline looming and have to get the whole thing done in insanely short space of time, which is what I've just done. Most people are doing a room at a time, or they might buy the sofa and then later save up to buy the rug. They might buy the cheap ready-mades just to as they've moved in, but actually later down the line, they'll invest in some beautiful bespoke curtains. We tend to do things a bit slower. And if you've got that vision in place and that colour palette nailed, even do a vision board. Big fan of a vision board or a mood board. It'll keep you on track.
And actually is look around you and realise what you've got rather than the kind of, oh, you know, having another baby or whatever and having to move.
Yeah.
It's difficult. And the way that we're going and kids not even being able to afford.
Yes, it's crazy, isn't it?
Their own houses. It's just... Yeah. It's pretty dismal, isn't it?
Yeah, it is quite dismal. So I think, and I think as well, because we've had this real property boom, cheap money borrowing time of it, and that's been reflected on the TV shows we watch and everything, it's actually just really trying to change our mindset that it isn't all about, like I was saying, moving to the bigger house, yeah. needing more space, adding the huge extension. It can be just, which is what I've done, switching my living room and my kitchen rooms over. Because we had a really tiny kitchen and a really big living room. And what do? We spent all our time in the kitchen. Mm. We assumed we needed an extension. Actually, we just needed to swap the rooms around.
I'm so glad to hear you get it all wrong as well, just like us normal people. Sophie, thank you so much. I could talk to you for hours, but I know you've got a really busy diary, but thank you very, very much indeed. It's been really interesting.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
We better just say that Harlequin, you go on the Sanderson website.
Yes.
And the Sophie Robinson collection is just about to launch.
It has launched
And then we've got the Great Indoors podcast.
Yes.
And your Instagram, what's your Instagram?
So I'm Sophie Robinson Interiors over on Instagram.
Lovely. All right, and watch the space for all she's up to in the future.
Thank you for joining me today. You can hear more House Guest on British Airways In-Flight Entertainment in the audio section, along with our sister podcast, Breakout Culture, with Lord Ed Vasey and Charlotte Metcalf. You can follow me on Instagram at Carol W. Annett.